Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Violent crime was up under Donald Trump. That's not even counting the crimes he committed.
Minnesota Governor Tim Walz takes the stage as Kamala Harris's Democratic vice presidential candidate. We'll look at Walz's record with Jacobin reporter Branko Marcetic. And we'll look at where the uncommitted movement stands with Asma Muhammad, campaign manager for Vote Uncommitted Minnesota. We'll also speak with Jeremy Scahill of Drop Site News about his new report, Something Came from the Outside, an eyewitness account of the aftermath of Ismail Haniyeh's assassination. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Democratic presidential nominee Kamala Harris campaigned in Philadelphia Tuesday with Tim Walz just hours after Harris named the Minnesota governor as her running mate. Before an audience of more than 12,000 people at Temple University, Governor Walz criticized his Republican rivals, Donald Trump and J.D. Vance.
I got to tell you, pointing out just an observation of mine that I made. I just have to say it. You know it. You feel it. These guys are creepy and, yes, just weird as hell. That's what you see. That's what you see.
Democrats, from former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi to New York Congressmember Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, praised Kamala Harris for selecting Tim Walz, who's seen by many to be a progressive populist. Walz was elected governor of Minnesota in 2018 after six terms in Congress, where he served as the ranking member of the House Veterans Affairs Committee. A former public school teacher and high school football coach who served 24 years in the National Guard. As governor, Walz has been praised by progressives for signing legislation to codify abortion rights in Minnesota, provide free lunch to public school students, and enact new gun control laws. Walz himself is a hunter and gun owner who was once endorsed by the NRA. Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro also spoke at the Harris rally in Philadelphia. Shapiro had also been in the running to be Harris's vice presidential pick. In news from Gaza, Israel has ordered Palestinians to leave the Beit Hanun area of Gaza City ahead of what's expected to be a new Israeli offensive. This comes as Israel's war on Gaza enters its 11th month. Meanwhile, Hamas has announced Yahya Sinwar will become the new leader of the group's political wing following Israel's assassination of Ismail Haniyeh in Tehran last week. Sinwar has served as Hamas's top leader in Gaza since 2017 and is credited with being the mastermind of the October 7th attack on Israel. One Hamas official told the BBC, quote, "They killed Haniyeh, the flexible person who was open to solutions. Now they have to deal with Sinwar and the military leadership," unquote. The news outlet 972 has revealed the Israeli army has been using Amazon's cloud services to store massive amounts of surveillance information on the population of Gaza. The news outlet also revealed Google and Microsoft have been providing the Israeli military artificial intelligence tools to help in its war on Gaza. A group of United Nations experts have condemned Israel for torturing Palestinians held inside Israeli prisons. In a statement, the experts wrote, quote, "Torture practices are irredeemably unlawful and constitute international crimes, yet form part of the modus operandi of Israel's notorious detention and torture system," they said. The experts went on to write, quote, "These practices are intended to punish Palestinians for resisting occupation and seek to destroy them individually and collectively," unquote. Meanwhile, the Israeli human rights group B'Tselem has published a major new report documenting how Israel's turned its jails into what B'Tselem calls torture camps. This is Sarit Mikhaeli, B'Tselem's spokesperson.
So firstly, it's important to tell the stories of the victims, of people who have been exposed to horrific abuse in Israel's prison system. Additionally, this publication is meant to change the reality. Therefore, B'Tselem has appealed to all nations and to all relevant institutions, including the International Criminal Court, to intervene, to end this reality and to hold Israeli policymakers accountable for what is going on, for the torture of Palestinian prisoners in Israeli prison facilities.
Many Palestinians who have survived torture in Israeli prisons have spoken out after their release. This is Moazzaz Obayat, who was held for 9 months in an Israeli prison.
The jail was very, very tough, as you can see in my situation. The proof are in my photos that show me before and after the jail. And that is enough to answer the question. It is an unfair detention, and there is killing, and they torture us with metal sticks. We were subject to all kinds of torture.
In Bangladesh, Nobel Peace Laureate Muhammad Yunus has been tapped to lead an interim government after mass protests forced Bangladeshi Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina to resign and flee to India. Yunus had been a vocal critic of Hasina's government. He's described her departure as Bangladesh's second Liberation Day. Muhammad Yunus won the Nobel Peace Prize in 2006 for pioneering the concept of microlending. Thailand's constitutional court has ordered the disbandment of the country's largest opposition party, claiming it violated election rules by campaigning against a law that outlaws criticism of Thailand's royal family. Some 150 lawmakers with the youth-led Move Forward must now transfer to a new political party. The party had won the most seats in last year's election, but was blocked from taking power. Senior United Nations officials are calling on the global community to do more to help get humanitarian aid into Sudan after a famine was declared in at least one part of the Darfur region following 15 months of war between the Sudanese military and the Rapid Support Forces. Edem Wasornu of the Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs addressed the UN Security Council Tuesday.
When famine happens, it means we are too late. It means we did not do enough. It means we, the international community, have failed. This is an entirely man-made crisis and a shameful stain on our collective conscience.
In St. Louis, Missouri, County Prosecutor Wesley Bell has defeated Congressmember Cori Bush in a closely watched primary. AIPAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, and its super PAC spent $9 million to take out Bush, who was one of the most progressive lawmakers in Congress. The election comes just weeks after AIPAC helped defeat another progressive, New York Congressmember Jamal Bowman. Bush and Bowman have both been vocal critics of Israel's war on Gaza. During a speech to supporters last night, Congressmember Bush decried the impact of outside money on the race.
This was the second most expensive congressional race in our nation's history. $19 million and counting. And so that's how much they spent in this race, mostly far-right funded super PACs against the interests of the people of St. Louis, the people of Missouri's first. They sought to divide us.
In California, a group of migrants jailed at two private Immigration and Customs Enforcement jails have relaunched a labor and hunger strike protesting dire conditions and demanding fair wages for detained migrant workers. The hunger strikers are also calling for the end to the excessive use of solitary confinement at the Mesa Verde and Golden State Annex for the facilities to shut down. Many of the detained migrants and asylum seekers are paid only $1 a day to perform janitorial duties and other jobs at the facilities, which are operated by the GEO Group. The hunger strikers have reportedly faced heavy retaliation for taking part in the peaceful protest. In Milwaukee, Wisconsin, four hotel workers have been charged with felony murder In connection with the death of Devante Mitchell, a 43-year-old black father who died on June 30th after security guards pinned him to the ground for over 8 minutes outside a Hyatt Regency hotel. An attorney for Mitchell's family, William Sutton, welcomed the charges, saying, quote, what caused his death was the fact that four people beat him to death on the sidewalk and jumped on top of him. That's why he's dead, he said. In media news, New York police have arrested Samuel Seligson, a local journalist, and charged him with felony hate crime charges after he filmed pro-Palestinian activists hurling red paint at the homes of top officials at the Brooklyn Museum. Samuel Seligson's lawyer, Lena Whitty, denounced the charges. She said, quote, Samuel is being charged for alleged behavior that's protected by the First Amendment and consistent with his job as a credentialed member of the press. What's even more concerning, however, is that this member of the press is being charged with a hate crime, unquote. In other news about press freedom, prosecutors in Kansas have announced plans to charge the former police chief in the city of Marion with obstruction of justice for his involvement in a police raid last August targeting the town's local newspaper, the Marion County Record, as well as the home of the paper's publisher, Eric Meyer. His 98-year-old mother, Joan Meyer, who co-owned the newspaper, died of a heart attack a day after the police raided their home. And in Spain, climate activists spray-painted the mansion of the Argentine football star Lionel Messi on the island of Ibiza. The action was led by the group Futura Vegetal, which pointed to a report by Oxfam showing that the wealthiest 1% of the world's population generate the same amount of carbon emissions as the poorest two-thirds of humanity. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. When we come back, we'll talk about the first joint rally of the Democratic presidential and vice presidential nominee. Stay with us.
Just a perfect day. Drink sangria in the park. And then later, when it gets dark, we go home. Just a perfect day. Feed animals in the zoo. Then later, a movie too, and then
Day by Lou Reed. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. It's War, Peace, and the Presidency. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Democratic presidential nominee Kamala Harris campaigned in Philadelphia Tuesday with Tim Walz just hours after Harris picked the Minnesota governor to be her running mate. Walz was elected governor of Minnesota in 2018 after six terms in Congress, where he served as the ranking member of the House Veterans Affairs Committee. Walz is a former public school teacher and high school football coach who served 24 years in the National Guard. Harris and Walz spoke Tuesday in front of more than 12,000 people at Temple University, where Walz criticized his Republican rivals Donald Trump and J.D. Vance.
Like all regular people I grew up with in the heartland, J.D. studied at Yale, had his career funded by Silicon Valley billionaires, and then wrote a bestseller trashing that community. Come on! That's not what middle America is. And I gotta tell you, I can't wait to debate the guy. If he's willing to get off the couch and show up. So, you see what I did there? I got to tell you, pointing out just an observation of mine that I made. I just have to say it. You know it. You feel it. These guys are creepy and, yes, just weird as hell. That's what you see. Again and again and again, Trump weakens our economy to strengthen his own hand. He mocks our laws. He sows chaos and division. And that's to say nothing of his record as president. He froze in the face of the COVID crisis. He drove our economy into the ground. And make no mistake, violent crime was up under Donald Trump. That's not even counting the crimes he committed.
Minnesota Governor Tim Walz speaking as Democratic presidential nominee Kamala Harris's new running mate at their first campaign appearance together Tuesday evening in Philadelphia. Minnesota's progressive Congressmember Ilhan Omar celebrated Walz's selection on Tuesday, writing on X, quote, "Congratulations to our next vice president, Tim Walz. Our North Star state governor has signed universal school meals, paid family and sick leave, marijuana legalization, and protections for reproductive rights into law, bringing Minnesota nice to the ticket," she said. A video from last year has gone viral of Walz signing into law a measure guaranteeing free breakfast and lunch for all the state's public school students. The students embrace Walz and cheer him as he signs.
It is now law.
Meanwhile, Taryn Hauska, an indigenous lawyer, activist, and founder of the Ginu Collective, recalled on social media it was Walz who oversaw the 2021 police response to the Stop Line 3 protest, where she was, quote, shot by police with rubber bullets, mace, pepper balls, paid for by Enbridge. She said, "I heard shouts, cries, and gasping, coughing, punctuated by the sound of munitions firing and a huge drill out of a sci-fi movie boring through the river we were there to protect," unquote. A Minnesota judge later dismissed the charges against Line 3 pipeline protesters in the name of climate justice, saying, quote, "to criminalize their behavior would be the crime," unquote. We begin today's show looking at Walz's political record. As governor, Republicans attacked him for waiting too long to deploy the Minnesota National Guard on the protests after the police murder of George Floyd in 2020. Now, Donald Trump and J.D. Vance are highlighting how Walz signed into state law access to abortion rights after the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. Soon we'll speak with Asma Muhammad, co-chair of the Minnesota Uncommitted Delegation, about where Tim Walz stands on Israel-Gaza and pro-Palestinian protests, which reportedly may have helped to shape why he was chosen over Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro. But we begin with Branko Marcetic, Jacobin staff writer. His new piece there is headlined, "The Tim Walz VP Pick Shows America's Politics Are Changing." Branko, welcome back to Democracy Now! Why don't you lay out for us who Tim Walz is, the teacher turned coach turned congressmember, governor, and now VP candidate?
Well, Walz is, in many ways, an unlikely progressive populist. He started out as kind of a somewhat conservative member of Congress. He ran for this Republican seat, very rural, deep red Republican seat. He won it in 2006 in the wave election of that year. He was actually one of the few former military members that have been recruited that year by Democrats to try and win seats that actually succeeded. And he kind of improbably held on to this seat over the years, you know, through several different wave elections that went against Democrats, and he had this somewhat contradictory record. He took conservative positions on things like vetting of refugees and gun rights. He was favored by the NRA for a very long time, but he also voted against the TARP bailout. He was very anti-war. He had a very decent anti-war record, and right up to his time as governor, he very much pushed back against this idea that China is this adversary that the U.S. cannot have a cooperative relationship with it. And then once he won in 2018, he had run on kind of a somewhat tepid left of center program. But as governor, he really, I think looking at what had happened in the political landscape after 2016, the way that things had shifted, the way that progressive policies, investment in human infrastructure had become such a popular thing, he really kind of took that program as his own, and he ran on raising taxes on the rich. He ran on and actually implemented a policy to transition to renewable energy by first 2050. Then he moved that timeline up to 2040. He ran on investing in education and childcare, which in Minnesota was the most expensive in the country often. And then in 2023, when he finally got this Democratic trifecta, or Democratic Farmer Labor Party trifecta in Minnesota, meaning that the Democrats basically controlled the state Senate, the state House, and the governor's mansion, he ended up going full speed ahead and saying, look, we only have one chance to try and get all this done. And that's where you see the flurry of legislation that some of which you mentioned there get passed, in addition to which you would also list things like tuition-free public college for families making under $80,000 a year, banning non-compete clauses for workers, legalizing marijuana, of course, the renewable energy transition bill, and things like banning conversion therapy, a whole host of things, capping payday lenders. It was really one of the most consequential and productive legislative sessions anywhere in the country. And again, it's quite a surprising one, given Walz's background as someone who had not come out of necessarily progressive politics.
And Bronco, could you talk a bit about what he did in terms of the wage theft law and reforms to solitary confinement in the state, and a little more about what he did in terms of climate change?
Yeah, I mean, the wage theft law, that was actually something that he had done much earlier in his first term as governor, before he had that trifecta. So one of the interesting things about Walz is that he's someone who, like many Democrats, talks about bipartisanship, consensus, compromise. These are all things that we are used to hearing from Democratic officials. Usually what that means in practice is it's making deals that end up giving a lot of victories to the right. It ends up kind of disappointing the Democratic base. And what ends up happening is that the people who make the deals then have to sort of put a gun to the head of the Democratic voters and say, well, look, you have no option but to vote for us anyway. In Walz's case, he was actually able to work with Republicans, not on everything, certainly. A lot of his agenda was blocked when they controlled the state Senate, but he did actually manage to get quite a few things passed with Republican support, including this wage theft bill, which was then considered one of the strongest in the country. It made stealing wages more than $1,000 a felony. On climate, as I said, there was a 2040 renewable transition bill. That's a major thing. However, at the same time, we have to note that there were limitations to some of his progressivism on this. The Line 3 pipeline by Enbridge, which you referenced, Amy, that was one of the things that Walz, at first, he had sided with environmentalists and moved to suspend it, but in the end, he went ahead with it. And that's considered a big red flag for environmentalists, because as good as it is to set targets for transitioning to renewables, by allowing these pipelines to be built, it locks in potentially decades of carbon emissions. And of course, also serves as a ticking time bomb where these pipelines inevitably end up having leaks or some kind of problem, and they end up poisoning the water and land around them. In terms of criminal justice, again, He would probably be considered to have a mixed record. The right will attack him for a number of different reforms he made in criminal justice. He as you say, he banned solitary confinement in juvenile facilities. He also at first did things like banning certain types of holds by police in schools. He also was very vocally in favor of prosecuting the killers of George Floyd, and he made a number of other reforms, banning warrior training by police and other sort of dangerous trainings there. But at the same time, once some of the energy from 2020 in the streets had kind of gone away and public mood became more concerned with crime, with public safety, that kind of thing, then at that point, Walz kind of did what a lot of Democrats did and became much more of an ardent champion of law enforcement. He still signed certain reforms into law, don't get me wrong, but in the end, he put much more of a focus on putting money into police departments, putting more money into police recruitment. He opposed the Minneapolis ballot measure that would have replaced that city's police department with a public safety department. I mentioned the banning the certain holds in schools. Walz actually ended up folding on that under police pressure, and he ended up actually changing that and repealing it ultimately. So, there's a mixed record there. I think there's things that both his critics on the right are going to find things to attack him on, and as well as critics on the left. And I think also critics on the people on the left, progressives, they'll find things that they like about his record on criminal justice, too.
I want to go to an old radio ad for Walz's campaign for Congress back in 2006 that touches on the issue of health care.
Hi, my name is Tim Walz, and I'm running for Congress here in southern Minnesota for several important reasons. But today I'd like to tell you about one issue that's very personal to me. I am a retired command sergeant major in the Minnesota National Guard, and after years of firing artillery, I sustained severe inner ear damage. Because I have good health insurance provided through my employer, I was able to have surgery on my ear. As my ear healed, my hearing was gradually restored. One morning, several weeks after the surgery, I awoke to a sound I couldn't identify. I asked my wife what I was hearing, and she told me, "Tim, that's your 4-year-old daughter, Hope. You see, Hope wakes up singing every morning." But I had never heard that sound until that day. I'm running for Congress because I believe we as a country have a moral obligation to ensure that every father can hear his daughter sing, that every citizen receives the best care our medical community has to offer. I'm Tim Walz, and I approve this message because I've heard how important health care is to everyone.
And this is Tim Walz speaking last night.
In Minnesota, we respect our neighbors and their personal choices that they make. Even if we wouldn't make the same choice for ourselves, there's a golden rule. Mind your own damn business. These guys are after my heart, chanting, "Mind your own damn business." That feels good, so thank you. Look, that includes IVF, and this gets personal for me and my family. When my wife and I decided to have children, we spent years going through infertility treatments, and I remember praying every night for a call for good news. The pit in my stomach when the phone rang, and the agony when we heard that the treatments hadn't worked. So it wasn't by chance that when we welcomed our daughter into the world, we named her Hope. When Vice President and I talk about freedom, we mean the freedom to make your own healthcare decisions.
Tim Walz has zeroed in on J.D. Vance's previous opposition to a Senate bill that sought to protect access to IVF. Bronco Marchetich, it brings in several issues. It brings in the issue of abortion, and it brings in the issue of health care. He said a Trump-Vance administration would surely overturn the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah, I mean, I think, number one, those clips speak to his strengths as a communicator. And the issue of abortion has obviously become central to American politics since the overturning of Roe v. Wade. It's, in many ways, the reason why Walz actually ended up with